When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. Personally, I can't wait to get a new pair of Giannis Freak 5s. Whatever you're adding to your lineup next, head to eBay. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Just look for that blue check mark. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into another edition of Hand Raised Guys, presented by Comer Heating and Air, Southern Air Conditioning and Heating. On tonight's show, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Chris Lee of Southeastern14.com. We'll talk a little bit about some college basketball topics here on the weekend with the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight. We'll also talk, and then we'll dive a lot into the big weekend ahead in SEC baseball, preview all seven SEC series, including Florida at Ole Miss. We'll get to Chris in a minute. First, I want to tell you about Comer Heating and Air, Southern Air Conditioning and Heating, different names, same great products and services. If you live in Oxford, Tupelo, or the surrounding area, call Comer 662-801-1777. If you live in Hernando, Memphis, or that area, call Southern 662-429-4429. It's getting warmer outside. You want to make sure that air conditioning unit is ready to go as we get into the spring months and get closer to the summer months. So get in touch with our friends at Comer, our friends at Southern. They'll take great care of you, and please make sure you tell them that you heard about it on the podcast. Speaking of, this will be the Friday Oxford Exxon podcast, the Oxford Exxon located on Highway 6 West in Oxford, just next door to the Oxford Crystal, where you can enjoy the new Sunriser made with the larger round sausage. The combo is just $5.99. It's a great value to start your day right. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call it. Ask for my friend Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. You're going to love the product. You're going to really love the service. Corey and the people at Clark Ford, they'll go the extra mile for you. They care about being your car guy. They care about being your truck guy. I've learned that all month this month. It's been a vehicle-oriented month at the McCready House, and been thrilled that I have a relationship with Corey and the people at Clark Ford. They'll do the same thing for you when you make that call, 662-257-1900. Chris Lee and all guests join on the MyPerfectFranchise.net hotline. If you're a displaced corporate executive wanting to put your career in your own hands, if you're an experienced entrepreneur wanting to diversify, Andy Ludicky can help. He is a guy who owns multiple franchises and businesses. He uses his expertise to help others find their American dream through a very thorough and free consultation process. So call Andy, put your life and your career in your own hands. It's 100% free, so you've got nothing to lose. Find your perfect franchise at MyPerfectFranchise.net or contact Andy anytime at Andy@MyPerfectFranchise.net or 404-973-9901. So here's my conversation with Chris Lee of Southeastern14.com. Chris Lee of Southeastern 14, also VandySports.com, kind enough to spend some time with us here on this segment, a segment that is brought to you by LB's Meat Market, LB's 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, right across from Kroger. You don't need to go to Kroger. Just let Kroger be your landmark and then head across the street to LB's. The freshest cuts of beef, pork, chicken, fresh fish, house-made sausages, stuffed jalapeno, stuffed mushrooms, the bacon-wrapped asparagus, and so much more at LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. Please make sure that you tell Greg and the people at LB's that you heard about them here on MPW Digital. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. We've got a lot going on, man. You've got coaching searches. We got basketball to watch, and SEC baseball couldn't have picked a worse time to start.
You're a media guy. Let me ask you this. What did you think of Ole Miss's hiring of Chris Beard? We talked about it a little bit in Nashville. I think you asked me, is it going to happen? And I said, yes. So you kind of knew it would. But when it went down, any thoughts run through that head of yours?
I mean, if you're looking for a basketball coach, he's what, top top five, top 10 in the country.
At least
you just want to win games.
Yeah.
I think, and let's be honest, I hope I'm not insulting you. That's a hire that they can't make under normal circumstances.
It's more.
It's kind of like you're walking through the clearance aisle somewhere in a department store after Christmas, and there's something you never dreamed of affording, and it's 90% off. It's almost like, in a way, how can I not buy it at that point? I'm not meaning to demean Ole Miss.
No, it's a great example. It's going through and it's finding I think about this like from my daughter's standpoint. It's a $700 purse that they have wanted that they could never afford, that they find it on a clearance rack and it's $48.99, and the lady says, "Well, there's this. See that little frayed mark right there?" And they're like, "That's it." You're like, "That's it. I'm getting it." In other words, yeah, it's got a damage. It's not pristine. And so we can't sell it at this. And I'm not minimizing what did or did not happen. Yet I'll say, for the gazillionth time, only two people in the world know what really happened that night. And if they've agreed not to discuss it, then we're never really going to know. And you just move on. And obviously, Chris Beard knows that if anything were to happen again, not only is his career at Ole Miss over, but his career's over. What are the odds? I'll tell you, I think the odds are like zero. The odds are far more likely that he fields a very competitive, relevant basketball team in year one at Ole Miss, threatens to make the tournament, makes the tournament, and their basketball program is on a level that it's had a very difficult time getting to over the last 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, you just said everything that I would have said. I mean, look, there's a human part where we look at it, and it is what it is, and I wasn't there either, neither were you, and the optics of it were pretty disgusting. There's no getting around that, but I think you're right. I think if nothing else happens again, it's going to be nothing more than a talking point in the past.
I've been on the Ole Miss beat for 15 years. Okay? 15 years, you and I have talked about this stuff. In 15 years, I've covered two NCAA tournament wins.
Yeah. It gets old when you've got nothing but irrelevance to cover.
I've covered five NCAA tournament games in 15 years. Think about that. Two, and
you enjoy your basketball.
I love basketball. So I'm covering an NCAA tournament game once every 3 years.
Yeah.
And forget me for a minute. If you're Ole Miss, that's not acceptable, right? I mean, you know, we were talking about, there was this debate about Eric Musselman at Arkansas and him taking the shirt off, and people like, "Oh, he's a douche, he's a weirdo," whatever. I'm like, yeah, you know what? He's won eight NCAA tournament games going into the Thursday game against Connecticut. He's won eight NCAA tournament games in 3 years. The 99.9% of their fan base goes, "Whatever, he's our guy. This is fun." 3 years in a row, you're in the second weekend. I mean, that's, if you're Ole Miss, you're like, let's recreate that, because that's fun. The tournament's fun for a fan base. It's electric, frankly. And when you win a tournament game, it's just kind of this weird, it's a different feeling when you win a game in the NCAA tournament than it is anything else. It's just got this different feel to it. And when you get to a second weekend and you win a Sweet 16 game, man, it's just an electricity that goes through a fan base that I'm not sure that there's too many things that compare to it. Maybe winning in Omaha, maybe when you win a college football playoff game, it's something like that. But it's electric. It's different. And I think Chris Beard has proven that he wins games and gets to the NCAA tournament and wins games in the tournament. And I'll be frankly surprised if he doesn't do it at Ole Miss.
Well, and it's the one time you're on a national stage is in March.
Yeah.
And especially if you're Ole Miss, you're not going to be on a national stage unless you're in an NCAA tournament. It's, you know, you can win the NIT, doesn't really matter. But this is the time. It's when everybody's doing brackets, everybody's talking about it, everybody's watching. And, you know, here's the other thing. You know, you look at the roster of coaches in this league. I'd hate to make statements and say, like, this is the best ever, because you forget about certain pockets, but I can't name, other than maybe Kentucky, a single fan base who's just really, maybe I'm forgetting someone, just disgusted with their coaching situation right now.
And if they were to get rid of Calipari, he would have five offers within an hour because of his ability to recruit. No, you're right. I mean, you look around the league. I mean, Rick Barnes at Tennessee and Bruce Pearl and Buzz Williams, who I'm a super big fan of. And we just mentioned Musselman and the job that Gates did at Missouri this year was just off the charts. And I think Todd Golden's a rising star at Florida. I really like watching him coach. I like watching his teams. They would have been bubble-ish if Castleton had not gotten hurt. You know, look, Stackhouse is a really good X and O coach. I mean, his teams are always eminently prepared. I can't decide whether what I think of him. Watching him and listening to him sometimes, I don't know. I can't figure it out, but he's a very good coach. And, you know, Chris Jans did a really good job in year one at Mississippi State and is a strong team builder, program builder. The list just kind of goes on. I'm sure I left someone out. It's a brutally difficult league, and then you add Chris Beard to it. Chris Beard was in overtime in the national championship game against Virginia. Could have easily won the game.
I'm being repetitive. And by the way, my apologies to the audience. I've been getting over a cold, as you can probably hear it in my voice. But it's
Chris. They're used to listening the league to my is terrible voice, so your voice is fine.
The league is definitely bought in basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I left out Nate Oates. He's got Alabama as the number one overall seed. I knew I was leaving someone out. I mean, you got four of the 16 teams in the Sweet 16 are from the SEC. All season, people are like, oh, the league's watered down. I kept saying, I don't think it is, man. I don't. I think the league's pretty damn good. There was this middle of the league. Alabama was up at the top, and they were so good, and Texas A&M kind of kept separating themselves, and then there was this glut of teams. The game that I keep coming back to was Thursday at the SEC tournament. It was the 6 o'clock game. It was the 7-10 game. 7-10 game between Auburn and Arkansas, and I was sitting with Kirk Sampson, the longtime Auburn SID, who's a really good friend of mine, big Cubs fan as well. We were mostly basically talking Cubs and stuff, and I kept looking out there. And at one point, Auburn and Arkansas go on this run of plays. And I was like, dude, this is the 7-10 game. This is the 7-10 game. And it just is all you needed to know about how good the league is. I mean, Arkansas was the 10 seed.
Yeah, Blake Lovell and I were sitting there having the same conversation. And two things, I don't want to go too deep off the path into the weeds here, but number one, that whole slate of Thursday night games was the best I ever remember in the SEC tournament. Like, they were all compelling. Everybody had something to play for. And by the way, you could probably argue now that Vanderbilt should have been the ninth team in the tournament. I think had a compelling case. And number two, that building was, have you ever seen that building more full on a Wednesday night?
No,
I was not expecting that.
You know, John Brady was sitting in front of me, the former LSU coach, and he was sitting next to some of the Ole Miss radio guys, because I guess he was waiting for LSU's broadcast. He's part of the LSU broadcast crew, and the Ole Miss South Carolina game was kind of heading down the stretch on Wednesday night, and John Brady just loves basketball, and. You know, the game was good, and the game was kind of, you know, it's a tournament game, and even bad teams get into tournament games. And John had the smile on his face, and he turned and looked back at me, and he's caught me kind of looking at the crowd like, this place is packed. This is Ole Miss and South Carolina, two teams that combined are 7-29 in the league. These two teams, they're going nowhere. Neither of these teams are going anywhere. At the end of this, one of these teams is going home tonight. And at the end of this, one of these teams is probably going home tomorrow afternoon. This is meaningless basketball. And the game that you're waiting on, LSU-Georgia, is every bit as meaningless. Neither one of those two teams are going anywhere. Like, why are you people here? did someone tell you that, hey, we moved the tournament up or whatever? And John goes, I've never seen it this full. And I said, I haven't either. This is, it's usually kind of ghost town. And it wasn't that night. And someone goes, did they let everybody in for free? And I'm like, even if they did, this is still impressive.
You still have to show.
It just had this feel to it. And you're like, man, this is, I kept saying, because what I'd been saying all along was, look, if you're Ole Miss and you can hire Chris Beard, you got to do it. And here's why. And then Thursday, right? Like Ole Miss played Tennessee at 2:30 and I did Feinbaum's show. And then I came back and I finished my writing and I went out and watched with Kirk, as I mentioned, the first half of that Arkansas-Auburn game. And that place was electric, man, for that game. And you're like, look, both of these teams are going to the tournament. Both of these teams are interesting. Both of these teams have kind of fun coaches to watch. I could watch Bruce Pearl coach against Derek Musselman all day. It's just, there's just such a ton of energy on that sideline. It's just kind of fun. And people could say, well, Pearl's weird and Musselman's weird. Whatever. I don't care. Whatever. It's fun to watch. I mean, if you like basketball, you're entertained. And you know, I was thoroughly entertained. And, but still, that wasn't Alabama coming in. That wasn't Kentucky. You know, you expect Kentucky to show up and the place to turn into a sea of blue and all that stuff. But it was fun. And I think the league's gotten super healthy with basketball. I talked to Rick Barnes earlier on Wednesday, just me and him. And he's like, look, we're going to add Texas and Oklahoma. And it's going to be even better. And it is. I mean, that tournament's going to go to 16 teams in two seasons. And it's going to be a blast when you add Texas to it and you add Oklahoma to it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. You look around the landscape of the league right now, there's not one program, with the possible exception of South Carolina, there's not one program that you look at and go, yeah, they're in trouble. They got no chance.
That's true. And they played.
You can make an argument for everybody else.
Well, and even Carolina played at the end of the season when there was nothing to play for. And when Paris and G.G. Smith got sideways for a bit and you thought, Well, you know, that might not end well. It ended better. They won some games. He got engaged again. And that, I thought that told you something too.
Yeah. No, G.G. Jackson ended up at the end of the season.
G.G. Jackson, excuse me. I said G.G. Smith.
That's okay. He ended up playing extremely well. Like that night against Ole Miss, he damn near brought them back and got them that game. I mean, he was the best player on that. Like that night I was watching, well, this is why the NBA loves this guy. I mean, you can see why he's got this skill set, a tool set that they think they can play with over time.
No doubt.
All right, let's talk some baseball, SEC baseball going into week number two. We're going to get into the series this weekend. It's which one starts on Thursday?
It's Georgia-Auburn, I think.
I think that's right. Let me make sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Georgia's at Auburn on a third, as you watch this today, Thursday. And then the rest of the series this weekend, Texas A&M is at Tennessee. Missouri is at South Carolina. Vanderbilt at Mississippi State. Kentucky is at Alabama. Florida is at Ole Miss. And Arkansas is at LSU. So we'll dive into those series in a minute. Before we do, Chris, is there any big takeaway? And we'll reference last weekend a lot as we talk about this weekend. Is there any big takeaway that stuck out to you from weekend number one in the SEC?
I think it was sweeps. Sweeps are really hard to get. And we had five of them last weekend, which is, man, that's a lot. Do you ever remember, not like we keep a record of an opening weekend of SEC play where you had five teams that swept each other? Now, four of those were at home. One was on the road. That was South Carolina going to Georgia and winning. And then this week, you've got, fortunately, I guess, for the teams that got swept, you've only got two of those teams that were swept that match up with each other. That's Georgia-Auburn. So, loser, that one's going to go home either 0-6 or a 1-5, which is not a place you want to be. But, yeah, and then you've got some other teams on the spot, Tennessee being one for reasons we'll get into. And then you've got the only two 3-0 matchups. That's Missouri and South Carolina, which probably wouldn't have been teams that were at the top of everybody's list. But I think are both pretty good.
yeah, if I said, hey, in weekend two, you're going to have one matchup of undefeated teams go. I don't think you would have said, you know what? I'm going to take Missouri, South Carolina.
Yeah, because one was on the road and the other was facing Tennessee. That would have been, I don't know what the odds on that one would have been, but if you had them, you probably are a lot richer today.
Yeah, I don't even know who I would have picked. I think I probably would have said, maybe Kentucky, Alabama. And then maybe Arkansas, LSU. I maybe would have said, well, LSU, as good as they are, could sweep Texas A&M on the road, and Arkansas could sweep Auburn at home. Maybe I'd go that route, but I don't know that I would have picked any of them. And so, yeah, to your point, five sweeps in a weekend was kind of wild.
Yeah, and the one in my backyard, Ole Miss and Vandy, that one was, if you'd said before the weekend Vandy's about to sweep Ole Miss, I'd have been pretty floored by that one too. So,
all right, let's. I told Chase this earlier in the week. I do not watch a lot of college baseball before the SEC season rolls around, and then I try to really consume a ton of it. I watched at least parts of 6 of 7 series. I did not see any of Georgia and South Carolina, so I guess I don't get an A. I get a solid B for my performance last weekend. We'll start with Georgia at Auburn, since they start on Thursday night. I can't comment on Georgia. They're 0-3. I'm sure it didn't go well. They're not pleased. I did watch a good bit of Auburn and Arkansas. Probably the third series that I watched the most of, behind Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, and LSU, Texas A&M. LSU, Texas A&M was kind of compelling. I told you this about Auburn as they get ready to face Georgia at home. What struck me about them was their pitching, especially starting pitching, was just kind of mediocre. It was okay. It didn't get mauled by Arkansas, but Arkansas was able to jump out to leads in all three games and then, you know, go to their bullpen. And Arkansas got, we'll talk about them a little later, but they got some pretty solid starting pitching all 3 days. Auburn just kind of got average starting pitching, and Auburn's lineup, it has some impressive hitters at the top, but it doesn't have the depth of maybe the Arkansas lineup that they were facing. And they really didn't have much of a chance in any of those three games, which sort of surprised me. I didn't know what to expect going into that weekend, but I guess Auburn coming off of a College World Series appearance, I kind of expected Auburn would get at least one game in Arkansas, and they never really threatened for any of them. So they head into week two with a ton of pressure against Georgia, because look, you don't want to get buried early in SEC play. And so there's pressure on Auburn to win a couple this weekend.
Yeah. And for full disclosure, I was battling a nasty cold and trying to watch basketball and baseball at the same time. So I didn't get to see much of that one at all. I think the thing to me is Auburn's really hurting well Joseph Gonzalez, Neil. He was the Team USA guy they had last year. They announced today he's got, I think, probably going to be out 6 more weeks. They're using John Armstrong as sort of the guy, like they use Burkhalter, the kid the Braves took in the second round, is their super reliever. I don't think his stuff is nearly as good. I just think they lost a lot of pitching a year ago, and it feels to me like losing Gonzalez, I'm not going to say it's going to be a death blow for them yet, because Butch Thompson's teams have been pretty resilient, and you've seen him at the end of the years. They'll play their best baseball and maybe sometimes make an NCAA tournament and make a run when you think they're not even going to get in. But I'm not sure they've got enough pitching to get back. And starting in an 0-3 hole is kind of a bad spot to be in that spot.
You know, they started Tommy Vail on, I guess, the Friday. And he's got a 2.55 ERA. He was solid. They just didn't support him at all. And then they went to Crotchfeldt on Saturday. His ERA is a lot more inflated than that. It's pushing a 5 ERA. Kind of looking, you sent me some advanced numbers. I'm sort of looking at his advanced numbers. Gets hit a lot. Has 2.3% home run percentage, which is a little high.
Vail's, okay.
Yeah, Vales is just 1.5. Vale actually gave them a winnable outing. But then after that, you start diving into the rest of their arms, and you get way down the list in SEC play with kind of where the guys that they're counting on in terms of production, where those guys are. And it showed over that weekend. And I don't know enough about them to know how they'll recover from it. But without Gonzalez, it's kind of like, you know, Ole Miss without Hunter Elliott. We'll talk about this. When you don't have that starter at the top,
yeah,
that you're counting on every Friday night, everything gets bounced back a little and roles kind of get exposed.
If you want to do a really good exercise for sizing teams up for a weekend, don't look at team ARA and that kind of thing, but just start looking and saying, okay, how can I get through 27 innings without it getting ugly over a weekend? And after their top three or four guys, and you're looking at the same thing I am, that's where it really seems to fall apart on them. And that's just a tough spot to be with baseballs flying out of parks at the rate they are right now. And we're not even to warm weather yet, Neil. That's another topic, is the home run numbers and the power numbers are just crazy. And we're seeing this, you know, where games are being played in 40 degrees and all kinds of stuff too. And that really worries me for the teams that don't have pitching.
Texas A&M and Tennessee, they get started on Friday evening in Knoxville. Texas A&M got a game against LSU, which quite frankly is an accomplishment. Anytime you beat LSU once, you should be, hey, it could have been worse, because it could have, LSU's elite. We'll talk about them at the end with their series with Arkansas. But I watched a lot of this Tennessee series at Missouri. And first of all, some credit to Mizzou, and the numbers bear this out. They're pitching the ball pretty well. I mean, they've got a handful of guys up kind of near the top. Zach Franklin, Tony Newbeck, Chandler Murphy, all these guys, Austin Trocer, all these guys kind of in the top 20-ish arms in the SEC from a numbers standpoint. And they hit it okay. They had some timely hitting. They were a solid defensive team. And it's easy to say, well, Tennessee, it's a small sample size. And, you know, they do have the two elite arms at the top in Burns and Dollander, and their numbers continue to bear out just how elite they are. That being said, Chris, if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm worried offensively, and and you've covered a lot more of this than I have. I kind of wonder if this is a distracted program. I kind of wonder if this is a marked program a little bit. They have embraced the role of villain to the point that everyone hates them and that everyone wants to destroy them and everyone gets up for them. And when you are a super elite team, as they were a year ago, that's okay. Like, LSU could get away with that this year where everyone goes, I hate those guys, I want to go after them. But if you're not elite, that can end up costing you games and spots. And I sort of think that's what we're seeing with Tennessee. Please feel free to tell me I'm wrong.
We could do a whole hour, I think, on Tennessee right now, because I think that whole thing could go so many ways. First of all, they started the season distracted. They had their shortstop not cleared by the NCAA for 2 weeks, whatever it was. They got a coach suspended. I don't know if you got a chance. You probably didn't, but I made a point of watching his press conference after the whoever they beat in the midweek yesterday, because I wanted to see how he handled it. He will say a lot of stuff. He will say exactly what's on his mind. And I wanted to see his body language and everything, because I thought there was some interesting stuff going on last weekend. First of all, he got run in one of those games. And then I think it was game three, and I watched a lot of that doubleheader on Sunday. They had a play at first base where they called the first baseman for his foot being off the bag. Now, watching on TV looked to me like he had a lot of cleat on the bag, but the umpire was watching very intently. And I don't think they had an angle that could have overturned it. And it almost struck me as they were really looking for something there. It was a play that I think ended up scoring a run or two, kept the inning. It was in a big spot, and it went against them. And they would repeatedly put the camera on him in the dugout. And he did mention that it was like Green Bay Packer weather up there. But he's sitting over there with the red face and blurry eyes. And he just looked like he was just in a daze. And maybe that's how I would feel too. If I was in 30 something degree weather with wind or whatever, but it just, the body language was really interesting.
Yeah. Missouri was playing in the same elements.
Yeah. Well, they were. And then in his press conference Tuesday, and this was at the first of it, you can watch, he said something about the hot water being turned off for them. And that's where he went to school. That they didn't have any hot water. They were just trying to get out of there as quickly as could, and then made a reference to that's what teams complained about here last year, too. I mean, it was really bizarre. There's that, but I'm with you. I wonder, they pissed a lot of people off last year.
I'm sure that Tony Vitello has an edge to him naturally, but it feels like some of this is really artificial. And now it's like, well, we've created this persona, so we have to feed it. And so I kind of expected a little bit, or thought maybe they would dial it back this year. After you watch the entire nation become Notre Dame baseball fans for 24 hours last summer, you know, I kind of wondered if maybe they thought, maybe we took it a step too far. Let's dial it back just a little bit. Let's just play baseball. We have some talented baseball players. Let's play baseball. And instead it feels like, no, we must be this program. We must be this evil empire. And I don't think it works. And so when you stop being who you are, and you get lost a little bit, I think it negatively impacts your production.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it'd be like me sitting here trying to be like Skip Bayless or something.
Yeah.
If I did that several days in a row, after a while, I would just lose it. I wouldn't be any good if I forgot kind of who I was, or a hitter getting into a slump, right? So he starts completely changing his approach, and before you know it, the slump gets deeper. You're
right.
You know, the answer usually is no. Just be who you are. It's okay. It's going to work out. You're good. And I feels like Vitello has gone to a place that he wasn't comfortable, and now he doesn't know how to find his way back.
Yeah, I don't know. I hear two sets of things about him. I know some people that have covered him and really like him. And when you did you get a chance to see the draft last year? The MLB draft?
Some of it, yeah.
He was their in-studio guy. He was tremendous. He was charming, because I think he's got all the stuff in his tool bag to be successful and also to be likable at the same time. And I don't know if you call it a character or whatever. The role of villain that they've embraced, to me, I don't know. It's been odd, and it's put a target on them, it seems to me.
Agreed. All right. Who do you like this weekend in that series?
I think I like Tennessee, but like I said, we could do an hour on this team alone, because there's some interesting stuff with them right now. They're 0-5 against top 50 RPI teams right now.
Yep.
So this is when you start looking at resumes, and it's not just how good are you, it's what have you accumulated. Their next four weekends, Neil, after A&M this weekend, they go to LSU, they host Florida, they go to Arkansas, they host Vandy.
Ooh.
Those are four of the top five teams in D1's poll right now. The only team that's not in there is Wake Forest, which is in the ACC.
Say those again. So A&M. LSU,
A&M, LSU, Florida, Arkansas, Vandy.
I mean, of those 15, you could end up 5-10 in those 15 games, 6-9 in those 15 games, and you look up and you're 6-12 in the league, and you're in trouble. Easy.
Yeah, I mean, you go 1-2 each of the next four weekends, and then you add that to 0-3. You're what, 4-11 at that point?
Yeah.
And actually, that's five series. We're missing one. Add another 1-3, and you're five. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at. Now, I think they're good. I think when you start counting the outs, they put the hitting aside from it. They can still pitch.
Yeah,
They got quality dudes in their rotation at the top, although, you know, Missouri sure hit them last weekend. And they got depth in the bullpen. But you've got to start beating teams. The best teams they have played so far have all beaten them. And this is the point in their schedule where they, again, I don't know if this is, this is the baseball universe coming back to get them, but that schedule is brutal out of the gate. And the one thing that you would have thought was a layup in the first six weekends, they got beat 23-6 on that one.
Yeah, it's not like they lost a collection of 5-4 games.
Right.
They got popped. They got popped a little bit. And even the game that was relatively close, finished up on Sunday, the 7-4 game, that was 7-2. And if Missouri's right fielder doesn't drop a ball, it's in 7-2.
Yeah. And he started yesterday. He started three different guys in his starting lineup that almost never start, which I thought was interesting, too.
Well, look, there were whispers about their bats last year. There was talk about them. A lot of scrutiny on that program. Sometimes when everybody's watching for stuff, I'm not accusing them of anything except for the fact that people accused them of a lot of things last year.
Well, I don't know how much play this has gotten in Oxford, but you know, the stuff for the SEC has sort of taken the bull by the horns with equipment stuff this year. And, you know, you had the sticker stuff last year and the checks, but a lot of that was being done by managers. The scrutiny that was on them and other teams last year, and I don't think the league wanted this publicized, but the bat checks this year are done by the umpires. And instead of checking every bat once and having the team managers do it, it's going to be done by the umpiring crew, which I don't think is probably incredibly thrilled about that because it's get to the park earlier and it's more work. But the stuff that teams and players were getting away with last year, and I'm not pointing a finger at any one particular player or team because I think it probably happened a lot of places. The ways that teams could get bats through inspections this year or last year are way different than what's going to happen this year. And I think they're also doing glove checks occasionally. They're looking for substances more. I don't know what that looks like more. But it's interesting to me. You saw a lot of teams that didn't put up many runs last weekend in conference opening play. And I don't know if that was coincidence, if that was cold weather or what that was. But the scrutiny on stuff on the whole, on everybody, is going to be a lot different this year. And I'm very interested to see how that's going to play out across a lot of places.
All right. We talked about Missouri. They head to Columbia, battle of undefeated SEC teams. This is kind of interesting because if Missouri could find a way to win a couple of games in Columbia, South Carolina.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch down to the sole. Personally, I can't wait to get a new pair of Giannis Freak 5s. Whatever you're adding to your lineup next, head to eBay. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Just look for that blue check mark. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
I mean, I don't think anybody had Missouri penciled as a NCAA tournament contender, but if they woke up at 5-1 in the league, they can start thinking about it. They're nationally ranked this week, which is an accomplishment for them. Is there any chance at all that Mizzou's the surprise of the league?
I think the answer to this is no, because you were knee deep in what was about to be a coaching search. Did you get a chance to watch any of them the first weekend when they played in Arlington?
I didn't. I just saw some scores, but I didn't watch any of that.
I made a point to watch them because they're not a team that you get to see a lot, and certainly you don't get to see them play good teams early. when they played in Arlington, they were hitting lasers all over that park, which I didn't necessarily expect to see. But you look across that lineup, they got Luke Mann, Trevor Austin, Ty Wilmsmeyer, a lot of guys, Ross Lowe, which he played a lot of ball in the league. And one way to get good in the league quickly, and A&M did this last year, was get your lineup old. And by the way, Alabama's another team I'd say about this too. When you start seeing a lot of guys that you've been seeing play in this league for 3 and 4 years, that kind of gets my attention. Now, the bottom half of their lineup isn't great, but when you've got 5, 6 guys who can really hit it, and they hit it against Tennessee last weekend, which is a top 5 pitching staff in the country, and they got 6 extra base hits off Chase Dolander, Neil, who I would have had as top pitcher in the league. Now, that one's changed now. It's obviously Skeens, but
yeah,
when they hit him last weekend, that got my attention. And like you mentioned this earlier, they've got just enough guys to pitch. They've got probably 5 or 6 arms that are getting outs right now. I don't know about the 7, 8, 9 beyond. That may be where they get in trouble. And I think having a 7-inning, 2 7-inning games in a doubleheader last week probably helped them a lot more than it helped Tennessee, because Tennessee's got a lot more depth. So they caught a break last weekend. But, man, this is a team that's a lot older. He's rebuilt his pitching staff through the portal, kept those guys in his lineup. And when I've watched him with the eye test, and I've watched him now play Tennessee and play some Big 12 teams, they've looked like they're no fluke to me. We'll see how it holds up, but they've looked good.
Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, the Commodores sweep Ole Miss last weekend, which I know surprised you. I guess it surprised me too. It surprised me that just how dominant it kind of was for Vanderbilt. It happened pretty easily, a run rule, and then kind of a blowout win, and then they were down 2-0 on Sunday and came racing back and won pretty easily against Mississippi State. Mississippi State, 2 years removed from a national title, and they looked terrible, which is it's really weird. They looked awful against Kentucky, to the point, and we'll talk about Kentucky in a minute because they go to Alabama, but to the point that I didn't even pay much attention to Kentucky because of the way Mississippi State was struggling. But Vanderbilt goes to Starkville. This is a big moment for Mississippi State because you're obviously playing a team like Vanderbilt that can pitch it the way that they do. And if you get in trouble here this weekend, lose on Friday, lose on Saturday, and suddenly you're staring 1-5 or 0-6 square in the face, that can be pretty daunting. This will be one you'll be watching. Obviously, you cover Vanderbilt. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, last weekend shocked me. In fact, if you'd made me make a pick last weekend, I would take an Ole Miss to win that series, even in Nashville. Vanderbilt had been hitting the ball so badly. The last 2-3 weeks, it has just been watching an endless parade of ground balls with that team. And I'm not accusing them of anything, but the way they hit last week, it was almost like they had the signs or something. Now, Corbin lit into them pretty good after the Loyola game 2 weekends ago, the Sunday finale. And maybe it got their attention, but their approach looked a lot different. They got more aggressive in fastball counts. And I think Ole Miss just ran into some guys that weren't throwing strikes and kind of paid for it, but that wasn't what I was expecting. Also, didn't think Hunter Owen was going to throw a complete game 2-hitter. Now, he's got good stuff, but he's his first year back from an injury. He was starting to pitch really well for them a year ago. He's a really talented lefty. He's got a really good fastball and a mid-70s breaking ball that are really working for him. And he did something you don't see this often. You don't see a lot of guys throw complete games, and you really don't see a guy throwing a complete game under 100 pitches. To do that against whatever Ole Miss's issues are right now, they're generally not been hitting. So I was really, really impressed with the way Vanderbilt handled that series, both sides. State, man, if you had asked me after they won the whole thing in Omaha 2 years ago, if you'd said, because State's lost 14 straight SEC games coming into this one, which is alarming. You look at the pitching numbers. State has walked this year. This is crazy. 135 guys and 192 2/3 innings, and it's hit 26. Both those, let's see. Well, one of those leads the league. The hit by pitch is second to Florida. they just, you start looking down the getting 27 outs game with them. After about three or four guys, it starts to really, really drop off. And I don't know when Cade Smith is back or if he's back. That was their best starter coming into the year. He's been out for a while. That's really hurt them. This is a spot for Vandy that I think that they're going to walk into a hostile place that that's not big fans of their baseball program. And you kind of think that because State can hit, although Kentucky really shut that lineup down pretty well last weekend. I almost look at this one and go, Neil, they surely they can't lose another series, right? But I don't know.
Swept. I think they, I would pick Vanderbilt.
I mean, I'll pick Vandy. I just wonder, like, surely they're not going to get swept in this one, right?
I mean, the math says that they're due to win a game, but
right,
they're going to have to play dramatically better than they've played against Kentucky. They didn't play well pre-SEC, and Vanderbilt's got the pitching to win Friday, to win Saturday, to go into Sunday with a pretty healthy bullpen and some confidence. And sure, I mean, if you made me pick, I'd pick Vanderbilt wins two out of three. But if you told me there was a sweep, I wouldn't even hesitate to tell you Vanderbilt swept them.
This is how bad State's pitching is, and you're looking at the same things I am. I look at right. runners per innings pitch. That's a good, because if you got runners on all the time, you're either in the middle of a disaster or you're about to be in the middle of one. In their top
BRIP, I got it up.
I think they've only got two guys on their roster that are turning in anything. And like, if you play fantasy baseball, this is basically WHIP plus you add in hit by pitches, which are a bigger deal in college baseball. They got two guys below 1.4 on the whole staff.
Yeah, Gartman.
Other than the two guys at the bottom have thrown an inning each. I just don't think Gartman, that's a good recipe to get through a weekend.
Yeah, Gartman and Sagente. That's it. Everybody else is.
Who's the switch pitcher they've got? I haven't seen that yet, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's not Dom, is it? I don't know.
No, that's something different. But yeah, I mean they are. Dom is the one guy that's been getting outs for them consistently. And after that, it's just, and again, that's where they miss Cade Smith. But like, I look at the names they've got, like Parker Stinnett, who struggled for them last year, is not even pitchable for them on this staff anymore. Which again, he's one of the guys that Casey Hunt has fallen off a cliff. I don't get it, man. I just thought with all the talent, with the way they have coached pitching, and I know he's, like it, I'm not going to say his seat's gotten hot. I don't know what the temperature is, but you see the Twitter outburst every weekend, and it's not been really pretty there.
Yeah, it's big weekend for them, no question. Big weekend opportunity for Kentucky. They're 3-0. Alabama is 1-2, but Alabama played Florida well. This should be an entertaining series. An opportunity for the Wildcats to get off to a hot start and feel good about themselves. And I think Alabama will prove it this weekend. I think Alabama's a pretty good team.
Yeah, two really old lineups. Alabama's is like, it seems like Alabama's been rolling the same lineup out there for 3 years. Their starting pitching had been quite what I think people hope, but they've got a little bit of depth there. Kentucky, Neil, I think their entire lineup, because I talked to Mingione before the season, I literally think their entire lineup is nine new transfers. And they're kids that have played for 3 and 4 years somewhere else, which again, that's what A&M did a year ago. They're not names that people know yet, but between that and their pitching's been really good so far. And by the way, they're number three in the RPI right now. So if you wonder about Kentucky getting the NCAA tournament, that's a team that just needs to keep winning games.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are two teams that are old, and that's something that has worked really well in the SEC lately.
Any thoughts on how that one's going to go, Kentucky and Bama?
Let's see. That one's in Bama, right?
In Tuscaloosa, yep.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably go Bama just because it's home, and I still feel like I'm still getting used to what Kentucky is. because they're guys that have played, but they're guys I've not seen play because they've been playing in other leagues. It feels like if Alabama gets better starting pitching, that's one that it should win. But their starting pitching, McNary has struggled. He's not been what I think they thought that he'd be. Grayson Hitt's been kind of dominant but wild at the same time. I'll take Alabama because that one's at home, but that one is really interesting.
Yeah, Kentucky, by the way, 19-2 overall, 3-0 in the league, 14-1 at home, 5-1 on the road. In case you're wondering about Alabama, the Tide is 18-4 overall, 15-2 at home, 1-2 in the league. So that should be a really fun series. An interesting series is the one here in Oxford this weekend, Chris. Florida comes in 19-4 overall. They're 2-1 in the league. They are 3-0 on the road. They play an Ole Miss team that just got swept at Vanderbilt, as we referenced. The defending national champs are 15-6, 0-3 in the league. Ole Miss is 12-2 at home, and they really need to get well this weekend against a very talented Florida team.
That is going to be, if you're Ole Miss, that's going to be how quickly they can get into the bullpen is going to be really key there, because they got three starters that are studs. Sproat threw a complete game two-hitter last week. The wildness is still a factor with him, but nobody's been hitting him. Waldrop is a kid that transferred from, was it Southern Miss, I think?
Yeah, he was from Southern Miss.
Yeah, and he's a first-round guy, and Caglione is the best, I guess, two-way player in the country. He's, 98 on the bump and got 13 home runs. No, their bullpen, some of the guys that they counted on a year ago are not delivering from them, and they are issuing a crap ton of free passes right now, which is kind of surprising with the talent they've got. But, man, they are also hitting too. And the way Ole Miss pitched last weekend, that's a little bit scary of a proposition heading into that one.
Ole Miss passed out a lot of free passes, which is, in this league, can get you beat in a hurry. It's the thing they've got to get fixed, I think. Obviously, they need to get Hunter Elliott back. They need to get Riley Maddux back. But that isn't going to happen right away. And so the guys that are pitching, they've got to pound that strike zone a little bit more than they're doing. I mean, that was the big thing against Vanderbilt, was you give up free passes to a team that comes into a weekend not hitting a lot. Well, a walk's as good as a hit in that situation. And then suddenly you get a couple of timely hits and teams start feeling good about themselves and games get out of hand. And Ole Miss offensively should be better than what they were at Vanderbilt. It's a really strong lineup. But, you know, I do think sometimes offensive players start to press a little when they feel like, hey, our pitching's going to struggle and we got to do it right now. And you start trying to hit the 8-run home run. And I'm not saying that happened, but there were times that it sort of looked that way over the weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you're Ole Miss, again, you try to get into their bullpen and you hope you get better starts. Revis looked good, I thought, at times in that game, but I believe he was a D2 guy from Indianapolis, so he's pitching against the SEC for the first time. Sonier's obviously base runners, really talented.
His BRIP, base runners per inning pitched, is 1.43, so he's right at that cutoff of where you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you could see where it works for him. Saunier right now is just walking too many guys. Yeah,
2.1 base runners per innings pitched is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I know he was talented and he's a first-round type talent and everything, but doing it in the SEC and learning that way is, I mean, you don't see a lot of kids that come in the SEC as talented guys that just shoved the first year. I mean, I don't think a team in the league has been more impacted by an injury this year than Hunter Elliott and Ole Miss, because when you've got a Friday night tone setter, and he would have been that for them, that changes the complexion of everything. Because if you go out of Friday losing that game and having started to eat into your bullpen depth, that just makes it really hard to win the rest of the weekend. And having them, he could have pitched with anybody in the league, Neil, the way he threw in Omaha a year ago.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, he was absolutely dominant the second half of the season. He was the reason he and DeLucia were the reason they made the postseason. He and DeLucia were the reason they went on the run in the postseason. And it was the opposite. Those bats got hot in large part because they started going, hey, we're going to pitch well. Let's just go get some hits. We'll eventually get to them. And then they did. And, the rest of that story. And so now they don't have Elliott. So you have to move Jack Daugherty from the bullpen where he's most effective into a starting role, which depletes your bullpen. And I don't know that you look at Jack Daugherty and go, okay, well, this is a guy that's a dominant Friday night arm. I don't know that he's that. It's the only one that's close to it is Gonzalez. Losing him for Auburn it forces the same thing. Instead of having a Saturday guy go, suddenly he's going on Friday instead of a guy that would normally go in the midweek. He's your Sunday guy, and it gets in people's heads.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, LSU lost a starter, but they have so much else that they could overcome it. Arkansas lost Wiggins, and some people pointed at that, but I don't know that Wiggins was going to be anything more than a one inning guy. He might have been, they might have even made him their closer, you know, and used. They lost Tigard on the back end, and they're kind of, we'll talk about that in a minute. They're kind of shuffling some, but no, I think Elliott's loss is the biggest injury so far in the league.
Is Mallett's done for the year?
Yes. Mallett's is done for the year.
Okay.
They feel like Maddox will probably get back at some point. And I think they're, you know, pretty hopeful that Elliott comes back halfway through league play ish.
Yeah.
You know, you don't rush that. You don't want to get into that mindset either. Like with, you know, and Mike won't. Mike Bianco won't do that. He'll take care of Hunter. But you don't want as a team to go, hey, okay, is it this week that he comes back? Is it next week? And when he comes back, right, he's going to be the great savior. Well, when he comes back, he's going to have to, you know, the odds of Hunter Elliott taking the ball on that first Friday and just going seven, not very high. I mean, you're going to have to build him back. You're going to have to take care of his arm. And so this pitching issue for them is something that they've got to get straight or else it's going to become a problem. And this is a big weekend for Ole Miss because you don't want to start 1-5. You want to get to 2-4 here.
And I'm looking at their schedule. We talked about Tennessee's. This is kind of another I've lost them for a minute. I mean,
it's a murderer's row.
It's Florida. It's at A&M. It's Arkansas. It's at Mississippi State. It's LSU. That is brutal. Now they have done the the walk the tightrope thing last year and gotten into the tournament. And maybe you get him in on the back end of the schedule. I think their lineup hits well enough. They can beat most anybody anytime, despite what happened last weekend. But that's one, man. You just hope that they can get to that point where they've got a chance with him back.
Yeah, that's the goal. The goal for them is maybe be 7-8 at the turn, and you get him back and you make a run in the second half. And, you know, they'll certainly have the confidence that they can win in the postseason away from Oxford if it comes to that. It's awfully early. Ole Miss could end up going 19-11 and hosting. But in a scenario where they don't.
Right.
Yeah, they the same lineup, a lot of the same lineup that ran through Coral Gables and Hattiesburg and Omaha is still there, so they know they can do it again. That won't be the end of the world if they're not hosting. All right, the nationally premier series is Arkansas at LSU. The Razorbacks come into this series 19-2 overall. They've played 18 of their first 21 games at home. They're 17-1 at home, 3-0 in the league. LSU, meanwhile, also 19-2. LSU is 14-0 at home, 2-1 in the league. They lost the finale at Texas A&M. I mean, on paper, this is a really fun series. I think if you're Arkansas, you can get one this weekend. You're pretty pumped. Anything more than one, if you're Arkansas, it's celebratory because LSU's the best team in the league. I can't speak to the country, Chris, but LSU's the best team in the league.
Yeah, I think without having seen Wake Forest, I have a hard time thinking Wake's better, but definitely the best team in the country. I think the thing is, like, can Arkansas – I mean, man, they got Wiggins out, they've got Frank is out, they've got Tigard is out, so that's the guy that was going to be maybe their Friday starter and their closer. And if they sit here top five in the country with that, and that's without a couple of their lineup guys that you thought would have been their best guys hitting at the rate that you thought they could, which
here's what they've got.
Speaks how good of a coach Van Horn is.
It does. Their rotation is Hunter Holland, looking at the list here, Will McIntyre, and Cody Adcock. And none of them have just like phenomenal numbers, but none of them have awful numbers. And then they've gone to Hagen Smith, who's probably their best pitcher at this point. There's no probably to it. He is. His ERA is 1.17 at this point. And they've started using him in a swing role. He's got a little bit of a rubber arm. They used him on Friday and then used him again as a closer on Sunday. Used him in sort of a long relief on Friday to wrap up the first game and then let him close an inning on Sunday to finish that series. So very clearly, Van Horn is doing the thing with Smith where he goes, okay, well, we'll utilize him in a game where we feel like we can get it, right? If you're ahead of LSU somehow on Friday or Saturday, you'll go to him earlier for a long relief outing and get a game and then figure out where you go from there. LSU, on the other hand, Skeens, his numbers are just, they're outrageous. I mean, this guy in 30 and a third, he has given up two doubles, no triples, no home runs, two wild pitches. He hit a batter. He is, his K percentage.
Well, the big numbers, he struck out 54% of the hitters he's faced.
That's what I was getting to. 54%.
That's like above and beyond Edwin Diaz level a year ago, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. Balls on, batted into play. He's giving up a 267, which is a remarkable number. His runs per nine innings is 0.6. You're going to win when you give up 0.6 runs per nine innings. I mean, he's incredible. And so he becomes that guy for them at the top of the rotation, who is that traditional, when we think about dominant teams, you know, Vanderbilt with David Price and, that kind of thing. You think about those kinds of arms, Ole Miss with Hunter Elliott last year with DeLucia the last half of the season, where you get that dominant arm on Friday night that sets the tone for the entire weekend. He's tremendous so far. Did I lose your audio?
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, you remember – you did for a minute. Do you remember how much they kicked the ball around the infield last year?
Yeah, they were sloppy last year.
Yeah. Guess who's leading the league in fielding percentage right now? It's LSU at 989, which also helps your pitchers. Yeah, I mean, their lineup is incredible. Cruz is probably, I don't know if he's going to be 1-1 or not, but he's going to be really close. That's who I would take.
Yeah.
Their newcomers are hitting for them a little bit. Tommy White has just gotten off being hurt. I think he won Player of the Week, did he not? The kid well,
his numbers are pretty. His numbers are pretty good right now. Gavin Dugas has been there forever. You mentioned guys and Jared Jones, the young players hitting really well right now. I mean, they are a talented team. I don't know that they are the deepest lineup in the league, but when you have the top of the lineup in the middle of the lineup like they have, it just, for a pitcher, if you make a mistake at the bottom of the lineup, you're like, oh God, I'm going to pay for this in a minute because we're flipping the lineup over. And I don't know that there are too many arms in the league that can face that lineup a third time and survive it.
Well, here's what I worry about from Arkansas's perspective this weekend. The guys that they're going to be throwing out of the front end, Hunter Holland and Will McIntyre, are kind of pitch to contact guys with the heavy fly ball tilt. That's two of the three guys they're going to be throwing against LSU. I don't know that that's what I want to run with in their park. Now, he doesn't have a choice at this point, right? And I think the way that he is using
Hagen Smith.
In kind of the, I don't know if the Landon Sims role is the right way to put it, but it worked for them pretty well last weekend, and I think it's a smart way to do it. But that is – I think there's going to be some anxious moments in that one. That's going to be a tough one for Arkansas to get. Now, I think if you give them a couple of guys, a couple of arms, kind of like Ole Miss last weekend, the series starts to tilt a little bit more. But I wonder if that's one that could go pretty sideways quickly, especially if they can't get their first couple starters through games.
Oh, I think so. I think if you told Dave Van Horn today that he could get one game, I think he'd take it. I don't think he'd ask any questions, because I don't know what the rest of their schedule is the next few weekends. But if you're Arkansas and you get Auburn at home and then at LSU and you walk away from that 4-2, you're pretty pleased because you've gotten ahead. Like, I don't have their numbers in front of me, but in terms of who they play in the next few weekends, but you would take that. So if they could get one, I mean, I'm sure he looked at that Sunday game against Texas A&M and said, well, maybe we could pull that off. Or here's the thing about Arkansas as we wrap is that offensively they're a little better than they were a year ago. So, you know, LSU's bullpen has not been lights out. They kind of give up some runs late. So it's got a chance to be an interesting series, but I think it's one that LSU will control.
Yeah, A&M got to Christian Little, their closer, last weekend and hit him a little bit. And that's the one game that they lost. But again, I look at LSU, and the thing that makes him tough, the lineup is as good as anybody's. But behind Skeens, they've got dudes too. They've got Thatcher Hurd, who was a stud at UCLA. Garrett Edwards has pitched really well for them. Ty Floyd's pitched pretty well. The Akinhusen kid, I think that they got two JUCO transfers out of their bullpen. That's one of them. They got Riley Cooper, who's the big kid, the big lefty, who's, you know, kind of a strike thrower, which is good to have when you're in tournament play, especially with that lineup. You just need guys to eat innings, and he'll do that. I mean, and they got kids like Blake Money, who've had big roles for them in the past, that can pitch, that they're not even having to get to yet. That's the thing that scares me about LSU, Neil. It's not just the lineup. It's that I think that they've got a lot of pitching depth, and those guys are all going to have a cushion to work with, I think.
Yeah, it's a little early to go crazy with this, but they look like a national title team. They look like they've got every
piece. If they're not the best team in the country, I'd be floored.
They've got every piece you would want to go into the postseason. Chris, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate you doing this. Enjoy your weekend, and I hope you continue to feel better, and we'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Hey, thanks, Neil.
That's Chris Lee of Southeastern 14. You can catch his work on that site each and every week. Also, VandySports.com.